That's me. Died in your arms tonight, cutting crew. You know, you had to do something like that with near-death experience talking that we're doing tonight with Dr. Jeffrey Long. More of him to come up here soon on Coast to Coast AM. Thank you for joining us tonight. A reminder that I'll be back again tomorrow night. I'm going to be talking with Jerry Avalos. And we're going to be talking about people are saying now that their frequencies, there's like too many frequencies going on, or things are being jammed, and they're talking about, you know, frequency stuff. And it's pretty interesting because I'm going to have kind of an expert dude come in here and tell you what all that means. But I can tell you basically that psychics and remote viewers are saying that their frequencies are being jammed. So I know there's some things even further out that's being jammed. So he's going to talk to us about that, and he's going to tell us why, and you know, his theories and thoughts, and how we can maybe escape it for those people out there that are the psychics and also the remote viewers. Also in the second half, John Leonard Walson is going to be on, and he's going to be talking about, well, he's going to be showing us his astrophotography and astrovideography. This man has taken some amazing, amazing pictures of things flying through space at night that you wouldn't see with your naked eye. Things on the moon and things on other celestial bodies. And you know what? He's not only going to, you're not only going to see that stuff, which, by the way, go to our website and you can, but he's going to tell you how you can do it too. Interesting stuff, because some of the stuff is related to the Star Wars project, or it is thought. So I hope that you'll join me tomorrow night. If you'd like any more information of what is going on at Coast to Coast, you just have to go to our website. And if you are not a Coast Insider and you fall asleep easily, that's okay. Be a Coast Insider, 15 cents a day, podcast downloads, everything that you've missed, you won't even think twice about it. You'll just hear it when you're awake. It's all okay. Be a Coast Insider. Go to coasttocoastam.com for more information. With stations all over the U.S., North America, Puerto Rico, Guam, and by satellite, we are Coast to Coast AM. I am your host tonight, Connie Willis. We are talking about near-death experiences, the evidence of that, and also the evidence of God. That's the big deal that we're talking about tonight with, and we're doing this with Dr. Jeffrey Long, and we're talking about his latest book that just came out, God and the Afterlife. And part of the evidence is, well, we've got a story with a little cliffhanger going on with Anne. Jeffrey, you were talking about Anne. So go ahead and start from the beginning again, because you weren't too far into it, so people will catch up that maybe weren't there.
Yeah, absolutely, Connie. Anne shared her near-death experience. She had a severe medical problem and actually bled in her lungs in a process called a pulmonary hemorrhage. And she had a near-death experience, and Anne, in her own words, and again, we're reading this straight from what Anne shared with us, "I had no brain function according to a scan. I was not expected to live, and when I was disconnected from the respirator, I was suddenly in a dimly lit room by myself. I noticed in particular that this room had a door, which I felt was special in some way. Then I became aware that I was no longer alone. God was there. I felt God as an all-encompassing presence, complete, total, and unconditional love in its highest form. Even though I saw no figure, there was no doubt in my mind that this was God. And then he spoke, and it was with such compassion. He asked, 'Are you too tired?' I knew that he was asking me if I was too tired to go through that door, and that through that door would be my death. I do not recall my answer, whether God sent me back or if I made that decision, but I do know I was given a choice. So it must have been my choice to come back, and miraculously, and it really is a miracle with that going on, God sent me back well." So that's an actual quote from a near-death experiencer that encountered God during their near-death experience.
And you're very saying touching. That, yeah, and are you saying that she came back and she was all well?
Yeah, she was all well. Very lucid in what she shared. I mean, the surveys, over 150 questions. Remarkably, even though they disconnected her from a respirator, which I can tell you medically means that it's assumed that you've been declared dead, for her to come back after that is, and I use the term miracle very cautiously, but in everything that I'm seeing in this case medically, this is a miracle. She came back well. whole, even though she was expected to die. And remarkably, that encounter with God seemed to be an important part of that.
Absolutely. Is there a lot of evidence of that where people have crossed over, then they've come back and they're healthier, they're better? I mean, not just alive, but healthier.
Of course.
Did they get a total healing?
Yeah. As a physician, I'm very interested in those type of near-death experiences where there seems to be medically inexplicable healing. And I would sure emphasize they're very uncommon, but we do see that. I had one very dramatic near-death experience, for example. There was a child that had very advanced lymphoma and had gotten multiple rounds of chemotherapy, and the tumors kept coming back and coming back, and the lymphoma masses were growing in the abdomen and choking off some bowel. And this poor child had to undergo emergency surgery, and I can tell you medically and as a oncology physician, that should have been a death sentence. I mean, this should have just been, you know, release that bowel obstruction to help them live their few weeks or at most a few months of their life. But during the surgery, this child had a near-death experience and became aware that she was going to come back well and healed, which is absolutely mind-boggling in the oncology arena. And sure enough, came back very quickly. All the lymphoma masses were gone, which is just impossible after you failed multiple rounds of chemotherapy. So that's just a good example of some of the kinds of incredible healing described in near-death experiences that I find especially meaningful as a physician.
Oh, absolutely. Have people come back and had information, news, messages, you know, that were unique? I mean, kind of out of this world. I don't know how to say that. I mean, have they come back and had information of something about what's going on over there, what they're doing when they talk to relatives? Okay, I know that people, when they have these near-death experiences, they talk to relatives. It says there's no time that has gone by, right? And they get all this information, then they come back after talking to, you know, Aunt Betty or whoever. Do they ever say, hey, okay, what do you do here in heaven? Or do they find that stuff out, or does it even faze them to ask?
You know, of course, people will observe and feel like they're a part of the heavenly realms when they go. First of all, sort of two parts to your question. We have some periodically people in near-death experiences get some information they could not possibly have known otherwise. For example, in one near-death experience, they asked about a very important document that was critical for this person who had a near-death experience to get their teaching degree. They lost it. Where was it? And their deceased relative they encountered during the near-death experience gave them very specific information to go look behind basically a cabinet. And so, of course, when they recovered, they looked back and it was exactly there as described. Uh-huh. So, you know, just one of the many lines of evidence for the reality of NDE that we see over and over. But again, getting back to your other very important question, you know, do people sort of in these heavenly, unearthly realms, do they ask, you know, what it's all about, what they're doing there? Typically, when people are in that realm, they know the answer. And the answer is that's their real home. That seems to be where they existed prior to their earthly life and they're returning home after their physical earthly life. And they have a profound sense that even though they may have had friends, family, and loved ones for decades of earthly life, boom, if they're in that unearthly heavenly realm, that's where they belong. That's where they want to stay, and that seems to be the core answer that they have.
I have more questions of why we're here. The more answers that you have for the other side, which I have no doubt believing, or, you know, it doesn't surprise me at all. It feels right. And I mean, I get it. I've always thought that way. But when you go over into the perspective of the other side and then look back at the experience, the human experience at Earth, you're like, what? Why are we here for a blink of an eye, according to most? Why are we here for this short period of time? What is the purpose? Has anybody found that out? Is it to learn, to grow? I mean, really, is that, you know, is it all about growing? Is that all it is? Is that it?
Well, that's a great question, Connie. and a very relevant question in my most recent book, I looked at that issue directly. In the most recent version of our survey of near-death experiencers, we asked them very directly, during your experience, did you encounter any specific information or awareness regarding earthly life's meaning or purpose? Directly relevant to what you just asked there, Connie. And remarkably, 36.4% of people responding to the survey said yes, they did get that information. And we also had a narrative response that we allowed to that question as well. So we were able to drill down on that a little bit and understand what exactly it is they learned during the near-death experience that was so important. And it seems to be, you know, certainly experience here is important, certainly having that, and very often life is described as a gift, but just some examples from those narrative responses to what near-death experiencers learned about life's meaning and purpose is as follows. And again, these are straight quotes. Awareness that our earthly lives really are meaningful. Love is an important foundation of meaning in our earthly lives. And love relationships with others are a very important part of life's meaning and purpose. So we get that, again, love, relationships. And I think one of the real core questions is that, you know, for people that have wondered, is life at all really meaningful and purposeful? Overwhelming and profound answer to that core question, yes, absolutely. We're here for a reason. There's meaning and purpose, important. So let's live our life to the best that we can. And certainly lessons, and especially lessons about love, seems to be a vital part of what we're all doing here.
Yeah, always thought it was about relationships for sure. And that's has to do with love. Here's going to be kind of, I'm going to throw one, a little curveball at you. You ready?
Yeah, I'll take it on. Go for it.
catcher's mitt on over there. I bet you'll have an answer to this because I know I've read about it. I know I've heard about it. And let's see if you've gotten anything on any of your questionnaires here. Has anybody ever come back from a near-death experience and they feel as if it's a, or somehow, you know, I'm just going to say it, another soul?
Oh, yes. They feel that they're a different person when they return.
Yeah, that it's
life.
A whole other soul. Soul jumpers or soul walkers. There's a name for that.
Walk-in, I think you're
a
right.
A walk-in. Thank you. You do know.
yeah, that's a great question. Typically, when people have a near-death experience, almost uniformly they return feeling that they were who everything that they were, their personality, their experiences, their memories, what they like, what they don't like. It all feels like they were before they had that close brush with death. But there are these very rare near-death experiences that are fascinating. When they have their experience, they come back and they feel like they're a different person. They kind of don't connect with the relationships they had before, their values that they had prior to them nearly dying. And they just feel, and often feel very strongly, that they're just a completely different personality and literally a different person. Walk-ins are an interesting phenomenon. Not a lot of research has been done on that. As a physician, I kind of scratch my head and say, geez, you know, maybe somebody that nearly died was so physically compromised that this could be some neurologic sequelae after what nearly killed them that they could have that impression. But again, what we don't know about walk-ins far exceeds what we do know. It's a real phenomenon. It's a real challenge, not only to the person that feels they're a walk-in, but also their friends, family, and loved ones, because they just aren't going to relate necessarily at the same way. And I think it's just going to take a lot of patience, a lot of understanding, and certainly, as we've learned from our near-death experiences, a whole lot of love.
Yeah, well, some of the experiences are examples of hearing that. People have said that their friends and family also knew that this person was very different. They had agreed that they would have believed in the walk-in situation because they said they were so different. And, of course, that person also felt very different. I've read a couple of different examples of this and talked to some people. And, you know, it could very well also be someone that came back to life. You know, they did the near-death experience, and they've always hated their situation. They could easily fake that one, right? Oh, I think I'm another soul. I got to get out of this family situation I'm in.
Yeah,
so you got to watch that, right?
Oh, yeah, interesting phenomenon. And, you know, do I think that can happen? Absolutely. I think walk-ins can happen where someone can, you know, basically just, you know, literally some different soul enter the same physical body. If there's one thing I've learned in my near-death experience research, that is, if you really believe we live in an infinite universe, you're on pretty thin ice if you start saying something cannot possibly happen.
Yes.
So I think in a universe of infinite possibilities that even some very remarkable things like walk-ins can and do happen at some point in time.
What about people coming back and they have these abilities all of a sudden? Would that be more considered a walk-in, or would that be, I mean, what is that? Do some of them come back, they're still them, but all of a sudden now they can play the piano, or they are this fantastic cook, or they have psychic abilities? What about, have you done any studies on that or noticed anything like that?
Oh, gosh, everybody that does near-death experience research observes this remarkable phenomenon about how people are changed when they come back and they can have psychic abilities. Again, scant research on that, unfortunately. There was one phenomenon called electrical sensitivity, where you have the ability to be aware of or potentially even alter adjacent electrical thing. We have the classic thing, sense where computers may not work as well. If you have that electrical sensitivity, street lights may burn out as you drive by. There's been actually one scholarly study on that that was intriguing. They couldn't really conclude that it, you know, with a certainty that they're seeing it, that certainly justifies more research. Now, what I've observed, and we ask a question very directly about changes in their life after the near-death experience, we see over and over, as other researchers have, that interesting psychic ability. Now, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that after near-death experiences, people change. They're much more loving, much more attentive to other people. They seem to be attuned more to others. So I think to some extent that psychic ability is just their heightened awareness of other people, themselves and as well as other people, that the near-death experience may have started them down the path of learning. But, you know, other psychic abilities, telekinesis, you know, prophetic abilities, you see that periodically in near-death experiences. I think it's fascinating. It just hasn't been studied formally to the degree I'd like, but you see some mind-boggling descriptions of psychic abilities after near-death experiences with some regularity.
Well, when people cross over and they come back to tell about it, they do say that they're all-knowing. Any question they have, they get an answer immediately, no matter what it is. So I guess maybe bringing back some of that, or your body's relaxed as in you know that you can get answers. You know, maybe that's a big part of it, is just relax and there it is. The answers are within.
Yeah, and that's a great one. Yeah, mm-hmm. You're touching on what's commonly described in near-death experiences as what we call universal knowledge. Mm-hmm. That means during the near-death experience, and actually it's fairly frequent, that during their experience they become aware of enormous, all-encompassing knowledge, that universal knowledge. Now, the interesting thing is that they're often, typically, unable to remember virtually all of that knowledge when they return to their earthly life at the end of their near-death experience. And I've had some people say that it seems to be like trying to put that ocean of universal knowledge into the teacup that is our brain. It just doesn't all fit.
Yeah, our little pea brains. That's Dr. Jeffrey Long we're talking about with near-death experiences and the evidence of God. Stay with us. You're listening to Coast AM. You have got it tuned into Coast to Coast AM, and we are jamming a little bit there with Owner of a Lonely Heart. Yes. What great music during the 80s. Absolutely fantastic music. The best in the world to me, I think. You could dance, you can move, you could sing. It's just nothing has been like it since. And I'm happy that during that time that was during the years I wanted to dance and sing. I love that tune. Just can't beat it. Well, thank you for joining us tonight, having a good time talking to Dr. Jeffrey Long about evidence of afterlife and also evidence of God. We've got more, of course, coming up, and we're going to be taking your questions next hour. Want to remind you about all the different things that are on our website and all the different things that you can take a part of with Coast to Coast, and one of those is seeing George Norrie on TV. You know, you've heard him for years and years and years and years. And you hear them all the time, right? I mean, Coast is seven nights a week. Absolutely love it. Best in the world. But now you can see him if you've never seen him, and maybe you've just seen pictures of him. It's called Beyond Belief TV. It's our TV show. You can go to beyondbelief.com and check it out. All the information's there. In fact, we even got a trailer for you to watch if you'd like to do that too. That's on our website. It's only 99 cents for the first month. You can enjoy many shows. I can't believe all the shows that are already there. I mean, to me, it just started, but I guess not. You know, I mean, crazy. This man works hard. So check out the trailer on our website. See what you think. I think you're going to like it. It's George Norrie's Internet TV show. If you'd like more information, go to our website, coasttocoastam.com. It's another very interesting show here on Coast to Coast AM. The real theater of the mind is radio, and that's what you got going on here, Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Jeffrey Long, oncologist and an NDE researcher, and of course, a wonderful, funny, bright, and also very positive man. And I love that about you. It's always a joy to talk with you. I got to ask you, what is, with all this information that you've gotten, golly, I don't know if you can answer this, but I hope you can, maybe even if you do the top three, but what is your most remarkable revelation to you when it comes to all your research and your findings?
Wow, that's a great question. I'll give you the top three, sure. First and foremost is that we're far more than we seem to be in our physical life. We've talked about a soul during this excellent show, the soul that can depart apparently during a near-death experience and can have consciousness apart from our physical body, a soul that's eternal, a soul that we all have. It seems to be both our destiny and heritage to return to our real homes in that unearthly life. That would have to be, I think, first and foremost, is that death is not the end. It's a beginning of a wonderful afterlife for all of us. But I think number two, given that I understood that over the years, then what does that afterlife mean? I think number two would be that there really is a God, that there really is an order, that there really is that unearthly, beautiful, heavenly realm. All the miseries and doubts and anxieties of our earthly life are gone, and it really is paradise, far beyond even what we could conceptualize paradise. And again, that seems to be where we're all headed. And then I think number three, the revelation I learned, is that our lives, as you go through the difficulties and problems that we all face, each and every one of us, I've come to discover through my near-death experience research, through what was shared with me, that our earthly lives really are meaningful, they really are significant, and that certainly helped me to face the difficult times with a little more confidence than ever before that what we're doing here, each and every one of us, what we're doing here on Earth really matters.
Oh, that's very nice. That's very nice. So, when you get this information, I know a lot of it is questionnaire, and maybe all of it is, and I guess my question is, have you ever been there when someone has come back and immediately gotten a story from them? Have you ever been in that position, or is it all pretty much questionnaire?
Oh, that would be pretty. Usually when someone comes back from having nearly died, as a physician, ethically, I feel compelled to be with them, to support them medically, to help
right.
them get back and recover, return to consciousness. For example, after a cardiac arrest, they are often what's called amnesic or don't have clear memory for several hours. So I haven't really had the opportunity, I think very few people have, to be with somebody who's recovered and recovered quickly enough that they wanted to start sharing their near-death experience, although that other people have reported that. Now it would be pretty dramatic when someone, they can come out from, recover quickly from that, which what nearly killed them, and sometimes they'll turn to their family and say, wow, guess what just happened to me, and share their remarkable near-death experience.
You're saying that does or does not happen sometimes?
Oh, that does. Yeah, that does.
Okay.
It's uncommon, but sometimes people can recover from unconsciousness or even a clinical death situation, recover relatively quickly and share to their, most often, interestingly, nurses, most often family members, less often doctors, but some people will recover and just immediately feel compelled to start telling everybody around them that remarkable near-death experience they had and what happened. So absolutely,
yeah. Well, Yeah, that's what I would think. I would be like, oh my gosh.
Yeah,
It's
and yet you
true.
can understand it from the perspective of those that have a near-death experience. I mean, here they've lived their earthly life for years or decades, and then here is an experience so radically different from anything that they've experienced. What they felt is different during the near-death experience, what they see, come to understand. Everything just seems to shatter what they thought was even possible for them to experience. And so you can kind of understand from the other side of the coin why near-death experiencers may be reluctant to share this even for weeks, months, years, even after it occurred, because I think that sometimes they have to take some time for them to really embrace it and come to grips with it and realize, yes, accept their experiences as for real.
I was interested as well about the life review. You said it wasn't that big of a percentage, but you know, that's something that, oh my gosh, you know, I'm a lover of Albert Brooks, and I love Defending Your Life, the movie. You had to have seen that, Mr. Near Death Experience
Oh, yeah.
Doctor. I mean, I just saw it the other day, and I just love the life review. He's just so funny. But and in heaven, all the food tastes good, and you never gain an ounce, right? You can eat as much as you want and it tastes delicious. But the life review that you said, the statistics aren't that big, but when they've talked about having this life review, some of them, I just remember one story where they said there wasn't any judgment. However, they felt the experience of like a bad situation, let's say, where they maybe made fun of somebody. They felt how they felt at the time that it happened, so they relived it totally. But they also felt the other, like I think there was two girls, and they were cutting on, they were kind of, you know, making fun of some other kid. So in the life review, she felt what she had done years
Oh.
ago. And then she felt what the girl next to her did, and then she felt the victim of the abuse and felt it all. But she also had said there was no judgment. It was kind of just that you kind of learned from it and felt it, I guess.
And you raise a real good point. That's absolutely true. Life reviews are a review of a portion of their prior life during the near-death experience, or even all of their prior life. And that, Connie, shows the tremendous acceleration of consciousness during near-death experiences. And imagine processing decades of your prior life in just a matter of minutes of your time of unconsciousness or clinical death. But that's we see a lot of life reviews, of course, in near-death experience. And what you described there, we actually see quite a bit of as well. Those are called panoramic life reviews, where you not only are aware of every action that you did throughout all of your prior life, but in addition to that, you become aware of, from the other person's perspective, of how you interacted with them. And that can be for good or that can be for ill. As in the example you provided, if you've mistreated someone, reached out unlovingly, you understand that from the other person's perspective. And it's really interesting in these panoramic life reviews where you're aware of your interaction with a person from the other person's perspective, you really see very quickly how even some seemingly small, trivial act of love or act of harm can really resonate and ripple through that other person's life as well. So it's an amazing learning perspective on the interactions that we have with other people, how it affects other people, and the impact it can make on other people's lives, even when the action there seems so brief or trivial, you wouldn't expect it to make an impact. And you're also right on, Connie, during a life review, when you just think about that, folks, here you are seeing everything you've done. And if you're like me, you've done some things you're not proud of.
Oh, really? What are those
Yeah,
things?
we
Can you tell
won't
us?
go into that.
Tell us the top
Yeah. Oh, are
five.
we at the top of the hour yet? Well, anyway, but it's true. I mean, we all have things we've not been proud of. And so a lot of folks actually dread the life review and literally worry that they're going to be judged and potentially harshly for, what they've done in their life. And you make an extremely important point there, Connie, that you aren't externally judged during your life review. Now, you sure have every freedom to make a decision about what you see of your prior life, the good things you did, the bad things you did, things you wish you could have done a little bit differently, but you're not going to be condemned or damned or anything. It's as if there seems to be that wisdom on the other side that, hey, especially during our earthly life, we're far from perfect.
I wonder if any of them have gone up and when they've experienced the light and God and looked at up at God and said, "Hey, why'd you make me so short? What's going on? What I thought you were the perfect guy, you know." So anybody have them complain to God? So you know what? I think that it's a shame that some people have to cross over to come back to realize. It's always good to think of the other person being in the other person's shoes. We were always taught to do that, you know. And I don't know if those teachings are still around or not. I mean, yeah. With all the hatred that's, you know, with people on Facebook and all that kind of stuff, just a lot of that. Ugh. You know, you always got to think of what the other person feels and the consequences from that. And by doing that, it will stop you doing some other things. Or we'll have you apologize later, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's literally, Connie, we're in this together. And I think you make a real good point there where you have an era that we're in of divisiveness and often some bitterness, families being split by different ideological views. There's an important and powerful message from near-death experiences, and that is we're all in this together. Near-death experiences very consistently describe that there seems to be in that heavenly, unearthly afterlife a mystical connection, even unity of all of us. And we all seem to be a part of each other. You know, people really feel that when they're back in the unearthly, heavenly realm, that, you know, there seems to be that connection, that unity. Literally, they become aware that we're all part of this together. Just think, Connie, what if people knew that during their earthly life? Mm-hmm. That we're all in this together, that we really literally are our brothers and sisters worldwide, how much differently we'd teach each other, what a better world it would be, you know, with you know, much more respectful, much more appreciative, literally much more loving if we just understood that very important message from near-death experiences.
Yeah, it used to be instilled in family, you know, families would instill it and, you know, I guess that's kind of gone away, I guess. It's not yeah. the way it was. So I do notice that as everybody feels fear, love, fear has gone away. I mean, fear is always, it's a fabrication. And no one ever, I guess you did have some bad ones, you said. So there were some bad ones, some dark ones. But it's usually all about love. And so when these people deal with love, I guess they just take that fear right out of them when they come back.
Absolutely. During a typical near-death experience, all those things that we've had to struggle with in our earthly life, and so much of it's fear. I mean, start with that core fear of death. You know, until I started my near-death experience research, that was always in the back of my mind, and especially as a physician. You know, you see people ill and have life-threatening events or even die, and you always have to have that latent fear. What about me? What about my loved ones? You know, that's the one thing we're all going to share in our earthly life is that we're eventually going to end and we're going to yeah. die. And yet, that's just part of the profoundly positive message of near-death experiences, that we really don't die, that we're just, as near-death experiencers have described, we're literally spiritual beings having an earthly experience, that our true home, who we truly are, what in reality our deeper essence is that soul, that part of connection to that afterlife where there isn't going to be the kind of fear we know in our earthly life. That's been profoundly reassuring. Gosh, I've shared that. In fact, many of my patients that I have know I do that research, and you can just imagine people wrestling with cancer. Cancer is a scary word, and yet people often, my patients, know that much research. They may even read my books, and it's just a joy to me professionally to see how much that can help them adjust with their life-threatening illness and face their battle with cancer with more courage than they perhaps ever could before. I think it's really helped my patients live better than they ever possibly could have, lacking that fear about what the end of their life is going to mean.
My mom just turned 81, and I haven't seen her read a book in a long time, and she's reading the first book that you had.
Oh, cool.
And I like that. I'm glad, because I'm like, good, it's very positive. You know, it should make her feel good and take away any fears. So, yeah, I thought that was really cool. Now reading your book, I got two major questions here
sure.
that I'm not even sure how to word it a little bit. Well, one of them, but here's one. Okay, one of the examples that the lady was talking about how she was talking to some family member. I think they were on a bridge and they were talking, and she kind of caught up with her mother or whoever it was, and then, you know, came back. When they were catching up, why don't they say, well, what do you do here in heaven? You know, what are you doing? They don't seem to ask those questions, you know?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And I think the answer is that when you're actually experiencing a near-death experience and you're actually there, you know the answer. In other words, this is part of what you do. You're in this realm. You have this intense feelings of peace. And certainly what you do in a near-death experience variably described by variable people. But you know what? That's really an interesting question. Almost never do you have near-death experiencers during their unearthly heavenly realm asking other beings that are so commonly there, what do you do? What do you do next? What's important here? What do you like to do? What do you not like to do? Do you have a choice? You and I are sitting here asking those questions of each other, but during near-death experiences, interestingly, virtually nobody asks what would be an interesting question to you and me. I'll keep my eyes out for near-death experiences that report that.
Yeah, so please. I mean,
next time for sure when we're on.
You know, because they're all so different. I mean, you hear them talking about the woods and the forests and meadows and grass, and, you know, even though they have all said it's not earth, but it speaks of like earthly type things and places to live and doors and a home and cottages. These are what people say, you know. It's not like, and you're just floating, you know. It's so you gotta go, hey, so do y'all like play chess? Do you play in checkers? Do you go out and cook out? Do you play golf? What are you doing here?
That is such a fantastic question. I mean, we're not all in the afterlife sitting on a rose-colored cloud playing a harp.
I know. I'm never getting that from any of the people that you answer your questionnaire.
Great question. Yeah, that's why what we don't know about NDE far exceeds what we do know. That's a great research question. I'll keep my eyes peeled.
Yeah, please. You know what? Yeah, maybe you're not getting the answer because you're not asking that question on the questionnaire. So now we're going to throw some more questions on that questionnaire for Dr. Jeffrey Long. Please stay with us. You're listening to Coast AM. I'm Connie Willis, and we're talking about near-death experiences and evidence of God.